This whole atomic structure is supported internally by what the scientist calls space. Actually, there is no such thing as space. Space is full. Not with a solid substance or a static substance, but with a pulsating radiant energy. This energy comes from the fountainhead, or, as some people say, God. This energy, which is constantly stemming from the fountainhead, is also returning. It can therefore be said to be expanding and contracting simultaneously in all directions. This radiant energy is supremely intelligent because it reflects the infinite mind of the creative fountainhead of God. Thus, to be infinite, it must express infinity, and in infinity it must become also finite. So therefore this radiant energy will express itself in countless dimensions and in countless forms. Thus it has done in our material world, in our 101 elements with which our scientists are familiar. We also know that these 101 elements are bound and held together in our world by certain physical laws, as they are called. These are gravity, inertia, momentum, centrifugal and centripetal force. There are other laws, of course, which are relative, but of less consequence. These laws are the determining factors in the behavior of static masses of energy which you call elements. The scientist has not yet become aware of the fact that if we change the relationship of the emanating or sustaining life force of the atom, that it likewise changes its qualities and its relationship to the dynamic controlling forces. Many years ago, the scientists were pondering about the sound barrier, and thought that an aircraft could not pass through this supposed impregnable barrier. Today, with many thousands of aircraft passing through this barrier, the scientist has learned certain facts, namely that an airplane will behave quite differently after passing this certain line of demarcation which he calls the sound barrier. In other words, the known physical laws which govern the elements in his more familiar earth plane at stationary levels have now somehow become altered after passing over this barrier. In the future, the scientist will learn that in crossing over the ultimate barrier, which is the speed of light, at 186,000 miles per second, he will have crossed the last known barrier which relates to his physical world. Between the sound barrier and the speed of light, however, he will find many other barriers, or lines of demarcation, all of which change the relationship of mass and his elemental atomic structures to any of the known physical laws. In the appearance of the various types of spacecraft we have visualized that man has, on other planets, arrived at or passed a point, in his concept of science, which relates to the ultimate barrier, the speed of light. Therefore, the appearance of any spacecraft in our third dimensional world is not an appearance in a true sense of energy and mass equated from our own standpoint or position. In other words, the scientist in the other world has succeeded in transmuting or levitating elemental atomic structures into a relationship with the energy source, which takes it completely out of the realm of the known physical laws of this Earth planet. He finds then that he is no longer affected by gravity, inertia, centrifugal force, or any other known factor. Actually, these laws are all one and the same. They are expressions of the cosmic energy as a controlling ingredient in the expression of energy as mass on our plane. Therefore, it can be said that the appearance of a flying saucer to some individual, even though he may touch it or go for a ride in it, does not mean that he does this in a true physical sense. He has been temporarily, at least, transported in his concept, to a point where he will somehow meet halfway with this spacecraft. The spacecraft itself has had to come down from a much more highly evolved position into our lower Earth strata. We might compare these things with the chords of a piano. Thus, while we are playing a chord at the high end of the scale, we can also play chords at the lower end of the scale, which are either harmonious or inharmonious with our original basic chord. The flying saucer man must therefore bring his craft down into a level of relationship which is closer to our known physical laws of the Earth plane. This accounts for their peculiar behavior, such as the wobbling or the pendulum-like motion, the tremendous rates of acceleration, and their appearance of being glowing, white-hot, or transparent or translucent. Actually, these factors, in themselves, are only relative to the plane which the saucer is in contact with at the moment. In its true state, it is not bound by our known physical laws. so you can easily see that spacecraft have not actually visited our world or our dimension, nor has anyone, in a true physical sense, ever contacted a spaceman or taken a ride in such a craft. I can say this truly to those who have written books or accounts of these contacts. In reading all of the various stories of contacts which have been made by such persons, there has been always one important ingredient lacking. None of these people were in themselves a clairvoyant or a medium. In other words, they did not have the supersensitive development with which they could properly evaluate their position. Now I know that the word clairvoyant is likely to arouse some antagonism or skepticism. Let me say that if you have an open mind, you will start with Dr. Ryan of Duke University, and when you thumb through all the pages of history of the past 2,000 or 3,000 years, including the Bible, you will begin to understand what clairvoyance means. Clairvoyance is not some hocus-pocus thing which is practiced in some dark room. It is a clear-cut science which relates man with the higher and infinite source of his nature. In the inward sense, every man is a part of God, as was pointed out by Christ. The very fact that we exist in material bodies supports this theory. We could not exist a single moment without the supporting force of the infinite mind of God, as he manifests himself in a continual stream of power into every atom of our being. The very life of our body is dependent upon this source. Even the elements which we call food and take into our bodies are dependent in their relationship to us upon the expression of this cosmic force. So, in conclusion, may I say that man never will and cannot attain mastery over any other dimension than his own until he has mastered the concept that energy and mass, and the product of mass in relationship to energy, can be changed and altered. He must also learn that any or perhaps all of his present-day known physical laws will, in a few years, be discarded. Newton served his time. So did Einstein. There will be others who will come along and give a much newer and greater science, and with this new science will come a new knowledge and a new wisdom which will more definitely relate the consciousness of man with his true inner self. And with this consciousness that he is God, he will lay aside his warlike weapons. He will lay aside his desire and restlessness to conquer space. He will lay aside many of the aggressive militant attitudes which lack the common ingredient of brotherly love, and thus he will come into his millennium, his utopia. It might be well to say that the announcement of the satellite might bring a new wave of appearance of spacecraft, and if you should see one of these, do not doubt what you have seen, because it is quite likely that you have really seen it. But remember that this craft does not, in a true sense of the word, belong in your world. It does not react to our known physical laws simply because the minds who conceived that craft were definitely able to alter the relationship of the materials in that craft beyond the point where they were reactive to even such things as light. They have gone beyond the last of our known barriers or lines of demarcation. They have passed the point of 186,000 miles per second, which is the ultimate concept of our present-day scientists. Einstein tried to evaluate this by saying that such a relationship would assume a compressed effect, as far as matter was concerned. He was not quite aware of the factor of frequency relationship with the infinite emanating source of the fountainhead. This is of the utmost consideration and importance. It will be the basis for the New World Age and the New World Science. An announcement which recently came out of one of our great medical centers, the Mayo Clinic at Rochester, Minnesota, stated they had found that newly born infants just one day old sometimes had the symptoms of cancer. There was no evidence in the report to indicate that such cancer symptoms were inherited, nor is there likely to be any. Another one of the great factors which man will have to learn and consider in relation to himself is the factor of evolution and reincarnation. In the pages of this book, you are told how you are a creature of many lives and many evolutions. You are continually revolving back through states of consciousness where you can learn to assimilate and evaluate certain concepts. After thousands of such evolutions, you will be objectively viewing God in an infinite number of aspects. And in such viewing, and in such knowledge, you will attain sufficient wisdom to assume mastery over these conditions. Thus you will become one with God. As was explained, a person is primarily not a physical being, but a spiritual being, and he manifests into this world as a product of relationship with his spiritual self. This spiritual self functions through his psychic body, which links him with the supreme energizing force of the fountainhead. This psychic body is composed of countless thousands of tiny vortexes, or wave forms, which can be familiarized to atomic structures, except, of course, they exist in a much higher dimensional frequency relationship. Many of our past occurrences and experiences in past lives are thus deeply embedded in the intricate waveform patterns. Cancer is a product of misalignment with the cosmic motivating force which sustains every atom in our body, and being non-productive becomes destructive in nature, and like many other diseases multiplies its destructiveness. When the doctor or the psychiatrist in this day and age, or some future day and age, has properly assimilated this concept, he will be able to cure cancer. He will be able to cure many of the other diseases now incurable. He will have passed the last of the great barriers which have held civilization back in the slavery and drudgery of ignorance and disease. So, friends, read this book through carefully. It was designed by the great ones themselves, and these great intellects are much closer to God than you and I. It was brought into existence as an expression of divine love and the consciousness of these great beings. And in reading may you absorb the wisdom which is contained in its pages, and though you may, or may not, agree with all of the things which you read, you may rest assured that if you continue to pursue your course, being inquisitive and open-minded, you will eventually understand all that is contained herein and much more. It is quite obvious that, with the great number of subjects which have been covered in this book, they necessarily had to be made quite brief. However, we have been promised a succession of similar books, which will go into much more length and detail about the various subjects which have been primarily covered in these pages. But until this time, may you all rest in the graciousness of God's love. Since the publication of the present volume, additional communications have been received, comprising several additional volume. To the reader, as this book goes to press, astronomers are becoming convinced of the possibility of life on other planets. The reader will be interested to know that no less an authority than Dr. Harlow Shapley has confirmed this in a recent interview with the press. We quote, "Intelligent life on other planets certain," says Harvard astronomer. A conclusion that living things with some kind of mentality exist in other worlds now is inevitable, says Dr. Harlow Shapley, noted Harvard University astronomer. Probably the conscious beings which inhabit other planet-like bodies in the universe are not like the Earth's humans or man-like animals, the primates, Dr. Shapley told a lecture audience at the University of California. Nevertheless, they must be capable of some kind of thinking, he said. The developments that make this conclusion inescapable, Dr. Shapley asserted, are comparatively recent biological discoveries, and they make a convincing picture when linked to findings in the fields of chemistry and astronomy. The biological findings include a mounting pile of evidence of a close relationship between molecules, viruses, and genes. All things are made of molecules, which essentially are non-living aggregations of atoms. The molecules which compose living organisms are made of carbon, oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and a few other chemicals. Scientists have found that viruses are elaborate molecules, and they have some of the characteristics of living things. Under certain physical conditions, a non-living molecule accumulates more atoms, and at some stage it takes on the aspects of a living organism. And genes, which are responsible for the transmission of heredity from one cell or one organism to a descendant, closely resemble viruses. On Earth, it has taken a delicate balance of natural forces, just the right temperature range, a supply of water and air, and chemical conditions for bringing the atoms together to produce this, Dr. Shapley said. And the findings of astronomers make it appear that conditions somewhat like those on Earth must exist in countless other worlds. The Los Angeles Times, April 14, 1956. Addendum: at present mankind is entering into a space age, and, in this advent, there is a great broadening in certain concepts and aspects concerning the possibilities of human life lived on other planets in other solar systems in our universe. While such a concession would, a few years ago, be ridiculed, it is today a commonly accepted fact. And using the newly developed radio telescopes in conjunction with the already existing optical types, The man of science is probing the vast depths of space, trying to pick up any signals which would denote an intelligent race of humans on another planet. This is the first of many steps the Earthman will take before he succeeds in his quest to establish communication in some physical manner with other humans, living on distant planets. As of today, the Earthman scientist is not aware of the fact that communication between this and other planets has been going on for thousands of years. This has been done in three different ways. The first and more universally used method is mental communication, and every human who has or is living is always telepathically speaking, in direct communication with untold millions of humans living on uncounted numbers of distant planets. The second and probably most important means of spiritual communication is spiritual transmigration. During every moment of Earth's history, great numbers of disincarnate entities, people without bodies, are traveling back and forth between various planets, some to be reborn in new physical bodies, others to influence through subconscious auto-suggestion. Third, there has also been, in the past, as well as the present, some interplanetary travel in certain kinds of spaceships. Considering the vast amount of interplanetary travel which has, and is going on, even though unseen, and unrecognized by the material Earthman, we can therefore safely present an obvious fact, that Honorius Channel, Dr. Norman, is an interplanetary traveler, but more than one who is motivated by some capricious whim. He is one of the original Lemurians, of which there were 11, and who came to this planet in a space vehicle some 156,000 years ago, and established the first Lemurian civilization. In this respect he can remember and describe life on the planet Lemuria, some 700 light years distant. Since that time he has lived various periods of time in other and more closely associated planets such as Mars, Venus, Jupiter, etc., and is well acquainted with many of the people who live there, and can accurately describe their lives. This interplanetary brotherhood method of communication, travel, etc., is part of the life contained in his works, and again will be vindicated to some extent in future history. As Jesus said, "In my Father's house are many mansions." The great and unending vistas of space contain not only material suns and solar systems as they are known to the modern astronomers, but unseen and unknown, existing in different vibratory rates as different dimensions, are other vast and infinite reaches, all thickly populated with other kinds of planets, composed from energy substances unknown to the Earthman. These are the mini-mansions, places to be visited and lived in by any and all humans on their evolutionary pathway of life reincarnation if you please, but always a way in which the infinite lives and regenerates. To an old Lemurian master scientist, the Earthman and his science appears to be more puny, more elemental, and more ridiculous than a group of primitive children playing a jungle game. Yet he is temperate in his judgment, a temperance which has been born through vast millenniums of time, a wisdom acquired by consorting with the ageless and timeless inner dimensions which, like vast ervishes in an endless sea of time, gyrate in infinite number and convolutionary expressions, repeating each regeneration endlessly, for such is the way of the infinite. A knowledge of this infinite is yet to be acquired by the Earthman, and which will supplant his archaic beliefs in demons and gods, an understanding which will relegate his religions back into the dust of his crumbling temples, a wisdom which will give him wings swifter than light, a way to span the vast regions of space in less than a twinkle of an eye, a high road to eternity and a byroad into every man's heart. About the receiver and author. Ernest Leland Norman, November 11, 1904, December 6, 1971. Was an American electrical engineer, 1, a philosopher, a poet, a clairvoyant, a scientific researcher, a paranormal investigator and the co-founder of the Honorius Science of Life and the Honorius Educational Foundation, 2. Before starting the grassroots work for Honorius, Ernest Norman also worked for the Borderlands Sciences Research Association as a contributing editor for the Round Robin Journal, and also worked as a minister for a spiritualist church for 15 years. Ernest Norman wrote 20 books in his lifetime about that covered everything from theoretical physics, spirituality, philosophy, theology, extraterrestrial life, sociology, poetry, and he also authored articles further emphasizing the interdimensional science he was trying to teach. The first book he wrote, The Truth About Mars, gives an account where he met the Martian ambassador, a being named Narel, and traveled to the underground cities of Mars in his astral body. He is referred to as the Honorius Moderator, shortened to the Moderator, or as Dr. Norman by his students, out of respect. A self-described genius child prodigy, Ernest Norman never sought a doctorate through academia as he was self-taught and did not have formal schooling for many of the subjects he seemingly mastered. Back to the beginning, 45.